So again, good morning, everyone. Very good to be with you through this medium of Zoom. For how many people is this your first time exploring, working with teachings and meditation via Zoom? Yeah, and for how many people have you done it maybe 1 to 3 times? How many people have done it 5 or more times? Okay, so most of us. So we're getting experienced at this, and I think there's a learning that's occurring, I know, in many communities that may lead when we come back to the past normal, when and if, I should say, that we will likely keep some aspects of the online possibility of working together. I know that's going to be happening with Spirit Rock. So I want to introduce myself to anyone whom I haven't met yet. I recognize a lot of familiar faces, many from Marin Sangha, but we just want to say a few words. So again, my name is Donald Rothberg. I'm here in right now in Berkeley, California, not too far from many of you, and my home teaching place is the Spirit Rock Center, about 40 minutes, 45 minutes away. Also in the San Francisco Bay Area. I also am a teacher at the East Bay Meditation Center in Oakland and other places, and have pretty broad interests in, have studied many traditional teachings, met many wonderful teachers, both from Asia and the West in the last 40 plus years. And have also had a strong interest in finding ways to connect these practices with life in the West, daily life, as well as the connection of our inner practices and social service and social change. So that's a short introduction. And also wanted to get a sense of where people are who are here on together. How many of you are from the San Francisco Bay Area? You can raise your hands. And then let's unmute people. And then I'd love to hear where other people are from. If you could just, it would be easier with the chat function, but if you could speak up and I'll repeat, and we'll try not to have everyone, maybe raise your hand if you can. And please, Sarah, and then maybe Kate, yeah. Hi. You can just say where you are.
I'm in Arlington, Virginia.
Yeah. Thanks, Sarah.
I'm on Whidbey Island in Washington State.
Yeah. Others from outside, Donna, please. You'll have to unmute, I think. Or do you have everyone unmuted? Okay, that should work. But we can't hear you, Donna.
The unmute all doesn't seem to work.
People have to unmute themselves?
Yes, I have to enable that then.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Yes. Now I could do it. I'm in Trinity County.
In California. Yeah.
Far north.
Yeah. And is it Jason?
From Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, Arlington. Right. Yeah. Thank you. Others from outside the Bay Area, please. Suzanne?
Whidbey Island as well, Washington.
Oh, wow. And then I can't see everyone on my screen. Others, maybe just speak up.
Hi, this is Carrie. I'm from Philadelphia.
Yeah, great. And others? Great. Carrie, where are you?
In Philadelphia.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good. So I want to welcome everyone then to this day on working with the three ways of seeing that liberate. And we'll be focusing on both teachings and practices on these three fundamental areas. First, impermanence, anicca. Secondly, dukkha. I like to translate that as reactivity. It's usually translated as suffering, sometimes as unsatisfactoriness. And then thirdly, anatta, or not self. And what we'll be doing in the course of the day is having time to explore teachings, talk about them, have discussion time, and have meditation time where we learn practices to work with each of these three. And the practices will be very amenable to being brought into daily life, both in formal meditation and then more in our informal practice, our life during the day. So this is a very, very wonderful area. So why don't we, Corey, if we could show the screen, I'll just go over the schedule briefly. So here's the overall schedule. You can see I've basically have divided it into four segments, each of them no longer than 75 minutes. The first three, 75 minutes each, and the last one, 1 hour. And so in each of these, we'll generally have time for meditation, for discussion of a particular teaching, and then some discussion, not always in that order. So you can see that in this session, I'll give an overview about these three ways of seeing, talk some also about impermanence, then we'll do a short meditation, and that will lead us into the 30-minute period, which I've labeled walking meditation personal time. Some of us may want to take the whole day and do it in silence. If we were in person, we would likely structure it that way. But I think some of us have other tasks or things you need to attend to. And so just in the periods I've called personal time or walking meditation, if it works to do walking practice, or maybe you want to do a little more sitting, and continue with the practices, that would be very helpful. But I want to just recognize the multiple needs represented by people in our group. So do what you need to do. Again, many of us may want to take the whole day in silence. So then we'll have about half an hour, and I'm going to say keep as strictly as I can to the schedule for a few different reasons, especially to give the 30-minute periods for walking or personal time break and so forth, and then having a longer lunch time. So I'm going to, more than I probably would if we were meeting in person, I'll try to stay with the schedule a little more strictly. And that might mean that if we're in a rousing discussion, I might bring it to a close a little more quickly than I would otherwise. So please understand that. So then we'll come back for the second segment. We'll be on the theme of dukkha. The first is, I'll go in a moment, go into talking about anicca or impermanence. And again, I think there probably will be, I may for the second and third do a talk first, then a meditation, then discussion. I think that's, so it's not exactly what I have on the sheet. And then a period for people on the West Coast, for many of us, would be lunch, could be personal time. You can continue with practices. Come back at 1:45 Pacific. I should say all the times are Pacific here. We'll come back 1:45 and then be exploring not self or anatta. In the same way, there'll be, I think for that, a talk, meditation, and discussion. Another half hour period for walking meditation or what I'm calling personal time. Then we'll come back for an integrative session where we talk about a little more deeply how to bring it into daily life. The emphasis in the first three segments will be more on formal meditation. So we'll again have that last period. I think I'll start there with a sitting, then a talk and discussion, and we'll finish at 4:30 Pacific. Okay, we can remove the image. Okay. Are there any questions about the schedule of any kind? I guess we would do, can we, people do the raise hands? Are we capable of that, Bill? You're muted, yeah.
I believe so.
Okay, good.
This has been full of surprises so far.
Okay, Liz has a question.
So if we want to ask you a question or send you a message, when are we able to do that?
There'll be time in all of the segments, all four segments.
The chat will open?
No, that would be live discussion. That's better for me because it doesn't work so well for me to be teaching on Zoom and to try to also monitor the chat function. Okay, thank you. Okay. So let me say a few words about these three ways of seeing that liberate, and then talk in more depth about impermanence. Many of us have been practicing insight meditation, and we may have wondered, what insights am I supposed to have? And when are they going to come? Or have I had them but not recognized them? Right? And so there are many kinds of insights that occur in our practice. We may have personal insights into our patterns and our habits. We may have certain kind of insights about unresolved issues. That can be one of the powerful things. The factor of what we might call intuition can really open up and develop during our practice. But in the tradition, and certainly as taught by the Buddha, there are, I would say, four main areas of insight that are taken to be most central. And the first three are what we're exploring today. So this is actually right at the center of practice. And these are insights into, in English, impermanence, what I'm calling reactivity, and then not self, or anicca, dukkha, and anatta. That these are really fundamental areas. I would say the fourth area of insight is the experience of nirvana or nibbana, sort of an opening to the sacred. But so what we're exploring today, again, right at the center of our practice, and yet, surprisingly, not taught so much. Maybe dukkha's taught a little bit more because it's also taught in the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. But the other two, not as much as you might think, right, given the centrality of the teachings. And I just also want to say a word about the terminology. Often, these three qualities, anicca, dukkha, anatta, are talked about as the three characteristics of experience or of phenomena. And I prefer very much the language that sees them as ways of looking, ways of seeing, ways of practicing that open up to insight, that open up to liberating insights. And I take this usage from the actually from the British teacher Rob Berbea, whom some of you may know his book Seeing That Frees, which I think is on my list, which is a wonderful book. He actually sadly just passed away in, I think, in the last 2 months, you know, dying fairly young. But he coined this phrase, and I like the way of understanding that these are ways of looking rather than understanding them more, we might say, metaphysically as properties of phenomena or of experience. So, and again, but just to say that when you hear other people talking or read material, you'll often see people talk about the three characteristics, and that's what we're talking about today. I'm just using the phrase, the three ways of seeing that liberate, to emphasize more the meditative dimension, the more active dimension, and the fact that the practices lead to liberating insight. And so insights are really the purpose of our practice. Liberating insight is the purpose of our practice. The reason to develop concentration or to develop mindfulness is so that there can be freeing insight. We don't develop concentration and stability, even though it brings peace and even bliss. We don't develop that just for the sake of concentration. You know, there's a line where the Buddha says, practitioners develop concentration. One who develops concentration sees things as they are. And then he goes on to say, one who develops concentration and has some stability of mind is then able to see anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, reactivity, not self. Similarly, with mindfulness, we learn how to be present. We have some degree of concentration, so we're not so distracted. But the purpose of mindfulness is not simply to be present. Being present and being mindful, we might say, is a support for what's most central, and that's having liberating insight, you know, or again, I like the title of Rob Berbea's book, Seeing That Frees, seeing that is freeing. That's what we're looking for. That's the aim of all of this. It's not to become peaceful. It's not to be settled. It's not to have bliss. It's not to work out our personal issues alone, but it's really to have these deep liberating insights. And so we're looking particularly into these three. In a moment, I'll talk more in depth about impermanence, but there are different ways to talk about them. My colleague at Spirit Rock, Wes Nisker, has a very nice way of talking about impermanence, dukkha or reactivity, and not self. And here's how he talks about them. And I think he mentions dukkha first and then impermanence second. Life is hard. It'll put you through the changes, but don't take it personally. Did you get all three of those? Life is hard. That's dukkha. It'll put you through the changes, impermanence, but don't take it personally, okay? Another way of saying all three of them just in one sentence, I got this from also my colleague at Spirit Rock, Sally Armstrong. She said that things are not permanent, perfect, or personal. It's another way of saying it very briefly. And so what all of this is pointing to when we've developed all three well, I'll just say initially, what this is pointing to increasingly is the capacity to be with the flow of experience, let's say in initially in meditation, to be with the flow of experience, notice it as impermanent, not be reactive, and not identify with anything that's happening as being me or mine, either liking it or not liking it. So this is pointing to something that can be described very simply, a way of being with the flow of experience, non-reactively, without grasping and thinking that something is me or mine. We've all experienced this at times. What this teaching is pointing to is that capacity. Now, along the way, there are a lot of subtleties to that, but in a simple way, that's what this is pointing to. And what we'll see partly today, and what that very brief way of talking about this, these teachings suggests, is that these three are related. That one of the main reasons we can't notice the impermanent flow of constantly changing phenomena is because we're reactive towards some of those phenomena. We grasp after them, we push away, and we do that often on the basis of a sense of self. You know, I don't like that, I want that, and so forth. So they all ultimately go together, but in terms of training, it's very helpful to look at them individually and work with them individually. So to focus on each of the three individually, and some of us may want after today maybe to stay with impermanence for a month, stay with dukkha for a month, stay with anatta for a month, or maybe it's a week each to bring these teachings and practices into your own life in a way that gets taken in, which usually requires a length of time practicing. But all three are related, and that again, the basic understanding is that we don't see impermanence because we're reactive, and we're often reactive because of a strong or fixed sense of self, which likes and dislikes. So that's the core teaching. And then to bring it into daily life, there are a lot more complexities and subtleties, but we can learn to work with these teachings also in daily life, and to find ways, for example, to develop non-reactivity, and you know, is very, very amenable to daily life, to have one's radar to look out for reactivity or to look out for a very strong sense of self and so forth. And so these can be brought into individual experience. And there's also a way, which I'll bring in not so centrally, but in passing, there's also a way that these teachings can help inform our collective experience. You know, we're having this gathering today in the midst of multiple crises, right? In terms of the crisis with the virus that's opening up the fact that we can now have this session with people from the East Coast and the West Coast. And, you know, in other sessions I've done, I've had people from Canada, Europe, and so forth, right? And that it really is, can quite extraordinary possibilities. But we also have that crisis. We have the people are looking much more clearly, many people, at racism, you know, as a phenomena and as a, you know, something that has both an inner dimension and a systemic dimension. And that's very much up for many people. we're also in, you know, I was thinking, yeah, I mean, we don't mention climate, but to use a baseball metaphor, the climate crisis is on deck, you know, and so there are ways that we can use these tools, and I'll bring these in passing. The main focus will be on meditative training, but we can use these teachings to see ways that looking at impermanence, looking at dukkha, and looking at the sense of self can also be understood on a more collective level. I think that's, I'll bring that out some. So, a few more words on impermanence. Interesting that a number of teachers, when they were asked, what's the central teaching of Buddhism, answered, impermanence, everything changes. The 16th Karmapa was once invited to the U.S. Congress. And since they didn't have much time to talk with him and they were preoccupied with very important things, they asked, could you express the essence of Buddhism in one sentence? And his answer, this was about 1980, was everything changes. In a similar way, Suzuki Roshi, the Zen teacher, was also asked, what's the essence of all of the teachings? And his answer was, everything changes. You know, the reality of impermanence. And some of you know that the Buddha's words given shortly before he died were basically, everything is impermanent, keep practicing. You know, that's usually translated as strive on with diligence. But he was saying everything is impermanent. You know, and again, we have this in many, many of the texts. This is from the Diamond Sutra. Thus should you think of this fleeting world like a drop of dew, or like a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream. The teaching on impermanence, I think, is there for a few reasons. Partly it's there to have us just see clearly what's occurring in experience. So I think ultimately the purpose of the teachings is to have insight into the way things are. But there's also a sense with the teachings, and you can hear that in the last two quotations I gave, there's also a sense that contemplating impermanence in some ways can give a sense of urgency. You know, because traditionally, contemplating impermanence also meant to contemplate the fact of one's own impermanence and one's own sure death, to give some energy to ask the question, what's important for me? And so it really points to a few ways of practicing with impermanence. One way is to contemplate what we might call more gross impermanence. The second way is to look more at moment-to-moment impermanence more meditatively in a way that can often go into quite subtle dimensions of experience. So I want to talk about those two, and then we'll do some a little bit of discussion, and then we'll practice together. And so this first way of practicing can be a wonderful way of reflecting, and really it's a practice I did for, I think, about 2 years. I took about 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning of my meditation period and just reflected on what we might call ordinary impermanence. The fact that everything changes, that the seasons change, that, you know, people are born, they die, politicians come and go, right? They are impermanent. Obviously, the virus will show that the assumption that most of us, or almost all of us, made in January, that life would look probably not too different in June, didn't turn out to be true. There was an unexpected impermanence, right? And so this first way of practicing, we can contemplate impermanence in an ordinary way, just reflecting and bringing in to that reflection contemplation of one's own impermanence as well. Or that one's life is changing, things change in one's life, but also that one is an impermanent being. So to contemplate one's own death. And this, even 5 or 10 minutes for a day, you can try this for a week or for a month, and it can actually have a big impact. Again, some of what occurs is there can be more of a sense of wanting to do what's important, really getting to one's priorities, which is something I've also heard very much during the COVID crisis, that people, partly by having more time, are really being turned back on themselves to ask what's important for me. How many can relate to that? You can raise your hands. Yeah. Yeah, so that's very much there. And then the second way of practicing with impermanence we'll explore just in a moment, is to be with impermanence increasingly moment to moment. And we'll work with a meditation in a few moments, but this can mean really learning to notice how something arises, a bell, a sound arises. If you listen carefully, it's changing. And then at a certain point, it ends. Right? So, and we can do that meditatively, noticing what's happening in our experience. And beginning to notice the arising, the staying, the changing, and the passing away of ordinary phenomena, of thoughts, of emotions. Notice the constant change of body sensations. And this can be a way, a wonderful way to practice. As we do that, we'll see that certain things get in the way of knowing impermanence. For example, generally our conceptual minds, our concepts typically don't take account of impermanence. We tend to use nouns which seem to suggest that things last and don't change. And so our language, which is obviously very useful, can get in the way of our sense of impermanence. Our being bound up with concepts also makes it harder to see the subtle change and deepening of concentration and the ability not to be so much in a world of thinking and concepts can open up the sense of impermanence. So maybe I'll go right from there into a few practices, and then we'll have some time for discussion. So I'll just do maybe 10 minutes of practices. So come back to a meditative place. Come back to, if you work with the breath, come back to whatever helps you stabilize attention. One of the best ways to train in seeing through impermanence or seeing impermanence is to individually work with one sense at a time. So we'll start with sound, and then we'll go to body sensations. What we're looking for is simply to notice, and it's fairly ordinary. This doesn't take a lot of concentration or subtlety. So we start in a very ordinary way, noticing, just as we did a few moments ago, the arising, the staying and changing, and the passing away. We'll do this first with sound. If it's helpful, use very, very quiet and brief labels, maybe arising, changing, passing away, if that's helpful to you. Now being with the ambient sound in your own space, whatever sounds there are, just noticing, arising, staying for a while, changing, passing away. Now we'll shift to attending to impermanence by focusing on body sensations. And you can focus, if you'd like to, on your breath, or you could focus on sensations in your whole body, or in a particular place, like maybe the hands touching, or the feet, or the area of the chest. And in that, see again if you can notice arising, changing, passing away. And it may be when I, for example, look at or notice the sensations in my hands, it's more like a constant, fairly subtle change. So you might just stay with that, much like you're almost noticing the flow of a river. again, using labels if they're helpful, maybe just changing very softly. Or arising and also passing. Now we'll look at a third area of experience. We could go through all the senses. I could also maybe invite you to find something to eat, and we could work with noticing the impermanent flow of experience involving taste and smell. And if you have any food soon, maybe a meal during the West Coast mealtime, you can do that. But we'll our last one, just for a few minutes, we'll work with being aware of the arising and passing of thoughts. This is going to be more subtle. So sort of sit back and be on the lookout for any thoughts which may have associated emotions just coming through. And just notice the arising and the passing of thoughts. We're just going to do this for 2 minutes. And now just for a minute, be open to the flow of impermanence in any part of experience. We'll just do it for a minute. So there could be just be open without focusing anywhere. And you can be with, you know, just notice sensations or sounds or thoughts or smells, etc. Just to be with it, whatever is predominant. And notice, again, arising, staying, changing, passing away. Bringing everything together now for about 1 minute. So in addition to the sound of the bell being an impermanent phenomenon, that was also a sign to come back from the meditation, as we know. So so these are ways to practice in meditation, very simple ways to practice. It can be helpful to just do it one sense at a time to train. And we'll find generally that working with sound, for most of us, working with sound and sensation, or maybe just one of them, is the most accessible way for most of us. It's probably how many people found it harder when we brought all experience together. Yeah, generally would be a little bit harder for most people. So we can work with that in formal meditation. We can do walking meditation, focus on our bodies and be aware of the impermanent flow. You can sit outside and listen to the wind and listen to it as impermanent. So a lot of ways to apply, and you can do this for, you know, the bulk of your meditation. You can take a whole day doing this. Sometimes I teach retreats where we might do this practices like we just did for the whole day or even for 2 days. And I've done personal retreats where I've done this like for a week at a time, right? And it can be, it really can change things when you look at it deeply. So let me see if there are any questions, observations, comments about either particularly related to impermanence, related to the teaching or the practices. And I guess we'll use the raise hands function. Could be an observation, something you noticed. So I see Babs.
Thank you. So the practice of just noticing what the awareness is, whatever is arising in the moment, is how I most often meditate, just being with it all. And I was just forgetting the name of that. It's something like Shikantaza.
Shikantaza is a Zen phrase, which means, I think, literally just sitting.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. But yeah, this is, I think what's new here, we often sit, I think this was you were saying, Babs, we often just sit and watch the flow of phenomena. So we're having a sense of impermanence, but what we're adding here is a little more focus, and we could even say a little bit of more reflection, that we're noticing it and saying this is arising. This is staying, this is passing. So we're really making it explicit that it's impermanent. Yeah. Yeah, did you have something else, Babs?
Yes, I was wondering, so for that, really noticing that, the arising in the past, this changing and passing,
yeah.
That would be a more of a preliminary practice, but a more advanced practice would it be to just be with those changes without the words? I find the words are limiting as far as the depth of a meditation.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's accurate, that it's really to train one to see impermanence. And so here we really want to learn to see impermanence, and we're in a sense less concerned about going deeper at this point. We want to really really tune into impermanence, and you know, even what I was calling the gross reflection, which isn't even, you know, formal meditation in a certain sense, can be really, really valuable. Yeah, thanks, Babs. Other thoughts, questions, I think. Okay, Liz, I see.
Yes, what can you hear me?
Yeah.
What just entered my mind and is most fascinating for me is the arising and passing away of emotions.
Yeah.
I am very excited about working with that.
Yeah,
And would you say that's really working with not self? or you're still wanting that to be in the category of impermanent?
Yeah, like I'm saying, yeah, as we work with all three of these, we see how interrelated they are. We see that if I'm having an emotion, if I, you know, to use one way of speaking about it, get identified with it, think it's mine, try to work out the story of this interaction with this person or whatever, and getting all involved in the story, I'm not going to be tuning into the impermanence. So that, again, but I could reflect on impermanence more, you know, the way I just mentioned in terms of, so there again, there are multiple ways to work with it. Generally, we say we like impermanence when something difficult happens, and we don't like it when there's something pleasant happening. So, but actually to reflect on impermanence with something that's difficult can be quite useful. So we could work in multiple ways, but meditatively, yeah, we'd have to not be too personally involved thinking about it for it really to work in terms of noticing impermanence.
You didn't mention the emotions, so I just, for me, that's an interesting.
Yeah, and I didn't mention it mostly for reasons of time.
Okay.
But yeah, I would sort of group it with thoughts and just to, it can be fascinating if we have strong emotions just to sit back, much like we were doing, not easy, but maybe you know, sit back, so to speak, and watch the flow and energy of emotions. Very interesting, for example, if you have anger, just to take it as a raw phenomenon, watch it change. It's pretty amazing. So thank you for bringing that in, Liz. Thank you. Okay, so what we'll do next, and we can, did we have one person?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry to bother you. It's a business question. Quickly, I've never been on Zoom longer than a couple of hours. So do you just leave the computer on when you're going away for lunch and things, and you don't quit the Zoom and come back in?
I think you basically have a choice. The link and the password are going to work all day, right? So you could, if you want, go off it and then log on again, or you can leave it on. Is that correct?
Donald?
Yeah.
No, we're going to shut down the meeting so that we can try to fix some of these problems.
Oh, that's
so
right. Okay.
People, after this, when people come back at 11:15, and I recommend that people come back a hair early, you will have to log into the meeting again the way you did at the beginning.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. So here's the guidance for the next half hour. See what you're going to be doing. If you're available for walking meditation, or some of you may even want to continue with some sitting meditation, work with the practices related to impermanence that we just did. You could take a walk outside, maybe walk slowly, maybe stay with sound, or walk a little ways, maybe sit near a road, listen to sounds, or sit near a tree, listen to the breeze, or work with body sensations. See if you can stay with some version, or maybe some of you are going to eat something, just stay with sensations of eating and notice the impermanent flow. So whatever you're doing in the next half hour or so, see if you can bring what we just did into it, in whether you're sitting, walking, just being around the house, and do it in a way that's appropriate for your activity. We don't have to get too tight and scrunch in. If we're, vacuuming, you can maybe stay with sound in a rough way. If you're, if you're doing vacuuming meditation, okay, you could do something like that. Okay, so we'll come back. You'll have to time yourself. So whatever sudden alarm, we'll come back and start. I think we'll start with a meditation. I think I'll have us meditate just for a little while. On impermanence again, just to start right at 11:15. So, and can they come back? People can come back a little bit before, Bill. Come back. Will it be open at 11:10?
We'll see.
Okay. So
yes, I will try to get us open again at 11:10.
That's the intention. And so, whatever is happening, it'll be impermanent. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so see you soon.
Bye.